Hey everybody, welcome to The Truth About Dyslexia. In today's episode, I am very lucky that I have Nick Cummins. Is it Doctor? Dr. Nick?
Doctor, yeah.
Dr. Nick. Dr. Nick sounds great. From King's College in London. Now, Dr. Nick here, and that can be a name for the process because I'll remember that, which is always good. Reached out because later in life, he was diagnosed with dyslexia. He's in a world of academia. Didn't realize that. And we're going to talk a little bit about his story, how he became aware, what he's finding out about dyslexia, and we're going to dive a little bit deeper. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, mate. Really great to be here. And yeah, I've been listening since I found out about my diagnosis. Definitely been listening to your podcast a lot, and it's been really insightful. So really happy to be here and chatting with you.
Well, thank you. We were just saying before we started, it's amazing how many people, how many engineers and people in auditory work, because you're a doctor in the auditory field. I will do it justice by giving you an intro, saying, do you want to tell everyone what you actually, what the technical thing you do is? Yeah.
So, I'm a PhD in electrical engineering. But yeah, I work in speech analysis and psychology, and it's a really interesting mismatch of fields, but it really appeals to me. You know, how we speak is affected by so many things. There's what we want to say, and there's how we're saying it. And then how we say it is affected by our mood, our health, our emotion, our age, our background, all these factors. And I just love that we have this signal that's informative of so many things, and we can start to learn using AI to pull out some of these individual factors and go, oh, when someone was saying this, they were some percentage depressed, or they were upset, or they were in a good mood, they're in a bad mood, you know, all these sort of amazing things we can hear and learn from a speech signal.
That's amazing. And it's so true, right? It intrigues me as well as, you know, I would say it in a much less smart and technology-based way, but, you know, it's kind of listening behind the words, right? You're listening, you know, where are the words coming from rather than just the words coming out of someone's mouth?
Well, this is it. And, you know, there's definitely that thing, especially in mental health, of people, oh, I'm okay, but, you know, are they? Are we really listening? Are we really doing this and checking in? So, and I mean, the other side of it is this physical aspect of some of these diseases that we don't think about as much, and they affect us physically. And the voice is one of the reasons, one of the sort of signals that this physiological change comes across it.
That's intriguing. Yeah, it's so interesting you say that, because it's one of the things we've looked at around mental health is, you know, so often, you know, that they kind of diagnose something as anxiety or depression, but they miss the root cause that goes behind that, right? Of and sometimes it comes from a place of dyslexia, ADHD, you know, the way your brain thinks, but the way you fit into society. And you know, this type of work you're doing, you know, really starts to cut through and use those signals to get better information, right?
Yeah, essentially, we're just looking at ways to help clinicians, help doctors make more informed decisions about people's health.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Well, how about we dive into a little bit about your story? Tell me, I guess, maybe start at the beginning, you know, how were you as a kid? Where did it go?
I was always, I guess, a bit quiet and a little bit shy as a kid. And reflecting back, I've always had messy handwriting. I've never been a good speller, those things. I would be pushing it to say I enjoyed school. You know, I didn't really enjoy school. It was challenging to fit in sometimes. I have some really good friends that I made at school who I still got, and I'm thankful for them for all their support but it was a challenging time of my life. And when I left school, I actually went, no, I've had enough of study, I've had enough of school, I don't want to do any of this. I actually became an electrician. So went and got my trade, and I really enjoyed that. And then that allowed me to travel the world as well. So doing my typical Aussie backpacker around the globe, and, you know, sort of came back to Sydney after a while, and sort of had a few things with injuries at work and a bit of just not quite job satisfaction when won another challenge or want something new to do. And speaking to my, well, then partner, now wife, about it, and decided to give university a go and sort of expand on that electrical theme into electrical engineering.
Wow. And have you always found that you're always looking for that next challenge, that next opportunity to grow?
Opportunity.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I think that's one thing that's appealed to me about academia and why I've stayed in it. I really found the first year of my degree really challenging. And I think a bit of that was just also coming back to learning after a big gap was sort of one thing I thought. And I guess the other thing is learning how I had to learn as well. And I enjoyed university more than school because you had that time and to learn at your own pace. You got your lectures, but you got all the lecture notes and you could go away and you could sit down and had that time to absorb information. And that appealed to me and how I like to learn.
And how does, going through university at that age, if you think back now, and I know for myself, when you see people get a diagnosis later, it's kind of like all the files click back into place over the rest of your life. And you kind of go, oh, that was why that was that way or that way. And you know, you sound very similar to myself, where we both can technically read to a point. We may not absorb information in the same way as the average person, where it takes a lot longer or we have to think about it in new ways. But was there any other ways you feel your dyslexia could have shown up in university for you or challenged you?
It's hard to sort of unpick that. I think I was challenged in going into something, going back to learning after so long. As I said, that was one of the challenges. And I discovered I enjoyed it. And I'm wondering the part of the, I guess, not knowing I had dyslexia, but knowing I had to work that bit harder around the subjects and do that bit extra work in something I enjoyed doing just gave me that challenge and gave me the sense of fulfillment. So yeah, while I knew, okay, I can't sit here and read this page of notes and absorb it straight away, but I'll read a little bit of that, I'll do a few, bit of homework from that subject, I'll do this, I'll do that, And I also felt like when it especially came time to revision that I really had to sit down with my notes and think hard about it. And that thought process of going, okay, I really want to understand this topic from a real fundamental level. And then I could pull it apart and I could found easier ways to explain it to myself than maybe was written in the notes. And sometimes a few of my friends liked that as well when they would look over at my notes and go, well, that's quite a good way of looking at that problem.
That's awesome. And, that's the, what we see a lot of is electrical engineering, and dyslexia are best friends. They're just the amount of engineers that are dyslexic. Funnily in the sound and auditory space, again, there's another couple that I know that are, doing so well at it because they think differently, they think outside the box. And when you're in an industry where problem solving is important, and I guess that's the key of engineering, right? Is if it wasn't problem solving, you'd just be a robot.
we were always told during my degree, we're basically learning how to problem solve here. So every course is just learning different ways of problem solving. So yeah. When we got out in the real world, we had skills to solve other problems that came our way as engineers. So yeah, it goes hand in hand with people who like to solve problems.
And anyone listening to this, this is actually an interview to sell you into the world of engineering, but it's a kind of a it's like, honestly, it is one of the, we see a lot of engineers, architectural side of people that can think outside the box, spatially, we're naturally problem solvers. So the great thing as well, if you can apply that with a passion, it gives you enough motivation, energy to get through. And that's what it sounds like with yourself, is you thought outside the box, you looked at things from different angles, and you taught yourself to explain problems in new ways that your brain could kind of latch onto, which is brilliant.
Yeah. Oh. And I mean, I think that and having university gives you that space that school doesn't, to think about problems differently. And that's why I think when I got into academia, finally, I just enjoyed it so much more than the school environment.
And it's a lot less forced, right? Like at school, whether you like it or not, you're told to be there. At the university, with the university, they're like, you can come or go. We don't care as long as you pay your bills.
<That's>... Yeah,
pretty much. It's easier. Oh, awesome. So that's kind of the university years. And
so that's kind of, so yeah, when I finished my undergraduate, my project supervisor at the time said, we were working on, already then, sort of my undergraduate project was in depression and speech and using AI, and my then supervisor said, you could turn this into a PhD. And that was a bit, something I hadn't considered when I started into the undergraduate, that I would go that far into it. And sort of, I like the topic, I like the supervisor. Again, I spoke to my wife about it, and she's got a PhD as well in physics. She had that, as she was finishing that when we first met, and she's like, oh, well, if you want to do it, let's go for it. And yeah, did my PhD and got that, which is another 4 years of academia. And then that, my wife is from Britain, and we decided at the end of my PhD that it was time to sort of come back to this side of the world. And we thought, well, going back to Britain might not be terribly exciting. Let's have a little bit of adventure on the way. So we decided to live in Germany and decided to do some, I got a position at the university there and decided to do some postdoctoral research again in the same area, coming out of, move from sort of electrical engineering to computer science, but basically still doing the same thing. And that's sort of probably when I started to become more aware of issues around dyslexia, was trying to learn a second language in a new job, which brought with it new stresses, as any new job does. So there's a few different things started to sort of come together there that made me aware that, you know, something might be happening. And it was actually pointed out to me by one of my German teachers, who basically was, I was making, beginner level mistakes whilst being able to converse at a sort of lower intermediate sort of level. So some of the things and mistakes when I was reading, I wouldn't make if I wasn't necessarily thinking about it and just talking.
That's interesting, right? And that's a really good point. For many, it's a great point, actually. Many dyslexics are so like that, in the fact that when we remove the stresses of reading or what we're not naturally good at, we're brilliant when we're in that flow zone. And it was funny, I was playing a game of FIFA. I love football video games. It's just kind of my zone. When I overthink the actions I'm taking on the game, I'm terrible. I lose every single game. The minute I fit into like a flow zone where I'm just trusting my brain and letting it go into its happy place, I'm like Ronaldo, or I'm a legend. I'm flying around the pitch. And it's the same with what you're talking about. When you're speaking, there's less stress, so your brain just flows into the right areas. But the minute it's reading, it goes back to being so specific and so direct of every item, of every consciousness. It just makes it extra hard, right?
Yeah. And yeah, so basically one of my tutors sort of went, maybe you've got some form or mild form of learning disability. And yeah, I spoke about it with my wife, and I looked into trying to get diagnosed at the time, but trying to get diagnosed with dyslexia in a second language didn't seem a good idea. I was like, well, I'm going to struggle with the language aspect of a language test enough. And then I thought, well, maybe I could organize, and next time I'm over in Britain, I could get the test done. So I sort of put it on the back burner for a little bit. And then the pandemic happened, and I actually got offered a job over in Britain. So we sort of were moving during the pandemic and a few other stresses. So I just had it was something I wanted to do and get tested, but life really was, had other demands at that time. And then as we sort of got later into last year and life was a little bit cleaner and I sort of had the headspace, I went, okay, I'll revisit this. And I approached the British Dyslexic Association and said, look, I'm an adult and I'm interested in getting tested. And this sort of set up the appointment for me. And I mean, what surprised me about that process was essentially how cut and dry the psychologist who took the test was. He went, yep, you're dyslexic. Yes. You know. And then yeah, that was one part a bit of a shock with the strength of it, another part going, okay, well, something has been going on, okay. Mm-hmm. And then with it also came some negative emotions around, well, it took me to age 42 to realize this, and why, if it's so cut and dry to this one guy, why wasn't this picked up on by someone else earlier in life?
It's a huge thing, right? It's so, I had it similar with ADHD when I found that out later in life. And it's this, you have this moment where your body just, you just feel it. And it's like, how, I think of myself as quite smart. How did I miss it, let alone the rest of the world? And it's amazing, right? It's like, you know, all of these feelings, emotions, and thoughts just flood you. And you know, and is that kind of how it felt for you as well?
Yeah, I mean, straight afterwards, after I finished chatting to him a bit, yeah, it was just tears. It was just, and I don't think it wasn't the upset tears. It was just sort of raw emotions sort of coming through there. And it just reminded me with the sort of ADHD there, it was actually a couple of friends got diagnosed with ADHD in their 40s as well. Last year, they'd done that a bit earlier in the year, and they'd sort of done some, you know, sent out some things on Facebook and stuff, and made me think, oh, I really should go and get, you know, motivated by them and the improvements they had seen. Oh, I should go and, you know, finally get that test done. And yeah, here I am at the other side of that.
Oh, it's a release, because you kind of, you know, it's all these things that you've been dealing with, and we've, you know, we chalk it up to depression, anxiety in different moments. And what I find, this is completely, there's no studies based on this. This is just an intuition. But from all the people I've spoken to, many of us have gone through lives of moments of complete anxiety and complete depression, but not long-term depression. It's not like a year, you're depressed for a year, which is really clinical. For us, it can be like one day you're completely depressed and you're like, why? I don't want to get out of bed. I just want to eat ice cream. And the next day you can be on top of the world. You've just, your life has changed and everything's fantastic. And then the next day you could be living in anxiety again, fear of the future. And you go back and forth. And because, you know, when you do find out about dyslexia, especially when you start to realize what you're realizing is it's more than just the reading, writing, and spelling part of life. It's a game changer, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the big eye-opener for me. You know, it's not, I'm not just a bad speller. You know, there's so many other things, and it explains a bit about the way I think. And yeah, when I do talk over people, that's just not a trait inherited. Well, it might be a trait inherited from my parents, but there's a reason for that. And, you know, when I tune out and don't listen a little bit and things, and yeah, attention span and these sort of things that come with it, and going, okay, that's why I do that. That's why I do that. And the more I learn about dyslexia, and the more I guess also realizing that it's that spectrum of behaviors, and definitely like listening to your podcast and my wife as well, and we go, no, that one's not quite me. You know, oh, that one is. You know, and pick out the sort of, oh yeah, that's definitely something that affects me.
Exactly. And then that's another great point, is that it is a spectrum. Not everyone, we are not all carbon copies. And over time, what happens is you start to see patterns. You really start to see patterns around it. Like one of the ones that I find the most interesting to look at in people is the true opposing behaviors. So we can be very hypocritical. We can get angry at someone for something over here, and the next day we can do exactly the same thing, but not recognize it in our lives. And that's one that's really hard to notice, because we're so clear on it. And over time, I feel we solve that a little bit as with age and learning. But when I think back to how young I was, I'd get angry at someone for doing this, but then I'd do the opposite. And it's intriguing.
Yeah, I have to mentally go back.
Well, I'm sure your wife
will be able to post it. I'm sure she will.
She'll be like, "Yes, that's you, mate. That's you." No, that's it's great to hear people's story, because this is the thing is, you know, when you find out about it, it can be pretty isolating, right? You're like, wow, if I wasn't picked up, is there many other people like this? They say there is, but where's this community? No one's really helping adults. It's, as you would have found, they're very good at saying, yep, you're dyslexic, good luck, or here's a speech recognition piece of technology, good luck with that, and have a great life.
It's the spell checker, and you're like, but when I can't spell the word enough for the spell checker to even realize what's going on, and you've got to spend that 10 minutes on Google trying 50 different combinations of what you think this word might be to try to get it out. Yeah,
it's so funny, right? And then you get to a point where you start to swap the word in your head. You're like, well, I'll just use a different word. I'll just use an easier word to say it.
Yep.
It's so funny, right? And if you like, one thing I'd say, just because I always try and keep these interviews pretty tight, because with, you know, like ourselves, we've only got so much attention. But if I was to say, from what you've learned about this, you know, what are the three biggest learnings or the three biggest things that you would have loved to tell yourself, you know, when you got diagnosed or even before? What would you tell yourself now that you've learned in the last few months, say, that you wish you'd known earlier?
Good question.
There's no right or wrong answer.
Yeah.
Just anything that comes.
Yeah. I guess it's probably something I'm still wrapping my head around, is that, you know, my brain is wired differently, and that's okay. And I do think differently to other people, and I will get frustrated at times if people aren't quite on my wavelength with me, but that's okay. You know, that that's who I am. This is not something I'm setting out and deliberately doing, and not something, you know, try to just get maybe a bit more confidence in me and embracing those things. And it's still something I'm really learning to do, I guess, would be one of them. You know, I sort of quite a few years ago, I never read. And then as I sort of, when I was backpacking, I got into reading books a little bit more, but never knew I never read them properly. And again, just sort of like, that's okay. And now I know why I can read a book 6 months later than when I first read it, and go, oh, that's what that was about. Oh, that bit made sense. Okay, there's some extra gaps that I didn't quite get. And I could probably read books 3 or 4 times before I've read them and understood them. And again, that's fine. You know, that's not a problem. That's, you know, it was one of the podcasts earlier in the year when you're going that, spelling and language and all these things that people think are your classic markers of intelligence are just, you know, one part of a very, very small story. And, you know, not being able to spell good and not having perfect grammar is fine.
That is, honestly, that is the, it's perfect, because that's exactly the truth about it, is there is nothing wrong with you. There are heaps of us out there. And anyone who doesn't get you, who cares? You know, there's enough people out there in the world. I think we're up to 8+ billion people. So like, if anyone doesn't get you, you can just let them go in your life. And there's nothing wrong. Like I think exactly, like just what you, how you can pick a dyslexic out is if you start to talk to them and you just get each other and you just get each other's flows. And if you go off on a tangent, it doesn't matter. And you talk over each other, you don't even worry about it. And you'll also find as well, as you go on, more and more of your friends, you'll start to think, I wonder if they have dyslexia. I wonder if they think like me. And this will become something that'll go through your life.
Yeah, I went to, in December, went to my first, like the sort of neurodiversity support group we have here at work. And yeah, this sort of conversation came up, how, someone was saying, I'm surprised, like, when I, you know, meet random people in pubs, that, you know, the ADHD dyslexic space seem to gather together and have a conversation, and we're all quite comfortable in that space. And I do reflect that I do have, an, you know, a fair few friends, at least, definitely with ADHD.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's... And some of my good friends, is that this sort of conversation that goes on for years but never starts and never stops.
Exactly. And honestly, we band together. Like, I would say a majority of my friends would have some level. And I think you said it really well earlier. This is a spectrum. And when it comes to things like everything from autism to ADHD to dyslexia, you know, I always look at it as a cocktail. You know, you may be 7 out of 10 dyslexia or 5 out of 10 dyslexia. You may be 2 out of 10 ADHD. And we all have a sprinkling of some level of autism, just to keep it interesting, even if we're remarkably high functioning, even though they don't use that term as much anymore. But it's, you know, it's all from that same path. And I think with research in the future, it's going to probably, you know, something's going to come out where they're all a lot more connected than current studies say. So, but it's interesting, right? It's, and it's interesting to, you're quite right, at the pub, they all just kind of glue together at the end of the bar.
Yeah, it's something like, yeah, that sort of ADHD, autistic, dyslexic space is something I've been reading over a little bit. I mean, I got tested for ADHD at the same time, but was only, 50% ADHD, not 100%. And, you know, my sister is autistic as well, so there's definitely a diversity in our family. And yeah, it's interesting how these things all develop.
Oh, it's amazing. And the amount of adults getting diagnosed with dyslexia, like, you know, we set this up three or four years ago, and the number of people that come through and just say, hey, there's just nothing, is, you know, the dyslexia stuff is all about reading and writing, but people just aren't talking about the other challenges of organization and order and the way our emotions work and how that plays into the whole of our lives, the good and bad. You know, there's lots of good and there's also some bad, but it's amazing how this is such an early space. You know, even, you know, you getting diagnosed when you did and reaching out and looking at places, there's not as much out there as you'd think, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the pandemic's sort of shutting us off a little bit as well. And I know that some of the adult groups here in London, I was looking at, just either are online only or just, you know, just not happening. And so, yeah, looking for these opportunities to reach out and learn more, and just hoping the world calms down and opens up a bit more soon.
Exactly. No, Touchwood, thank you so much though, Nick, for being on. It's so great to have someone in academia come out and talk about this, because it's, again, this is everyone in the world. Some of the, you know, some of the most brightest minds, you know, have this. It's nothing wrong with it. It just is a different way of thinking. It helps. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm sure everyone will love this episode.
No problems. I just say to anyone who is scared of academia because of their dyslexia, please don't be. It's such a free space for creative thinking, but it's, you know, and if you're always someone who's interested in that next challenge, it's a really good environment for that.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much, Nick. Thank you, everybody. Thanks. We'll be back next week. Have an epic rest of your day.
I hope you really enjoyed that interview with Dr. Nick. What an awesome human being. Now, if you are interested in building your confidence as an adult with dyslexia, make sure you check out The Confident Dyslexic. We're going to be launching a course just after the middle of February. Some may say the 21st of February, as my brain connects with what I'm trying to say. If you'd like to learn more about that, make sure you check out truthaboutdyslexia.com.